Okay, now everything is groovy. That's great. Clearly, we were in Morocco too long and like
too long. You were in Morocco for not too long. You were in Morocco for a very long time.
Yeah, 22 days total.
Oh my gosh, that is a long time. Why were we there, Mel? Hi, Mel. How are you today?
There's definitely so many new listeners, so we'll like quickly introduce ourselves today, and then today's all about. I mean, we've just been talking about Atlas Mountain Race for frickin' ever at this point, but I'm Mel.
I'm Cynthia.
Welcome. Thanks so much for being here. Expect lots of unhinged stories from both of us and also our guests. That's the gist of the show. And now today is all about what the heck happened at Atlas Mountain Race. I mean, if you're following the headlines, Cynthia won the damn thing. Whoop, whoop.
Thanks, Mel. Yeah.
And if you follow me on Instagram, I got Shermer's deck, which is a whole other thing. But we'll get
into that. What a badass for all that you went through to push through.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the effort. I really feel like I like turned over every stone, but leaving a little bit hungry for some sweet, sweet revenge. So spoiler alert, I'm going back next year.
Spoiler.
But
don't worry, Mel will be back in Morocco again, hopefully in less than 365 days. Maybe not for 22 days, though.
No, not as long next time. I mean, the reason I was there so long is I was traveling with my mom afterwards, which was
so fun.
Really nice. I was a bit dead, though. I didn't anticipate being dead for so many days. So when did you get home, Cynthia?
I got home on the 19th. It was a Sunday. So, yeah, 10 days ago. Today's the 29th. It's a leap year, y'all. Leap day. So, yeah, I've been home for a week and a half . And I'm still not 100%. I mean, I felt 2 days ago. I woke up and I was like, wow, my energy levels are good.
Mm-hmm.
My desire to ride the bike is kind of there again, which is good. But my hands are not quite there yet.
Okay, show me. We'll post the reel, but show me what's happening to your hands.
Okay, so my right hand is pretty good. Basically, I can move my right hand. My fingers can separate and come back together. I can do
waka waka. That's definitely not what it's called.
I know. But I can move my hands around. My left hand though, I can't move my pinky. Like my pinky has no strength and it's like slightly bent, whereas my right hand is like fully straight. So my hands are not quite back yet. My ring finger and pinkies are still numb. So that's your ulnar nerve. I learned that it's interesting, your ring finger, the inside of it closer to your thumb actually is, you can feel that. Whereas the outside, you can't, it's because it comes in that middle of your finger, your ring finger goes between the ulnar and the median nerve. I'm not a medical person at all, but I did learn that. And it's true. You can really feel, I mean, I can feel on the inside of my ring finger, but on the outside, it's still kind of numb. And then my grip strength is not there. So like zipping up shirts, jerseys, buttoning pants, like honestly, even typing on my keyboard has been challenging, which physically is tough, but mentally it's even harder because I just feel so limited. I can't get back to my regular life, you know?
The grip strength thing is like the most frustrating thing that happens. I had to take my earrings off today when I was at the orthodontist to take the x-ray, and I got half of them off and then I couldn't like pull the other one. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I think I have to leave one of these in my ear because I can't undo it. My
hand doesn't work. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's okay, but you should get that checked out. I was like, yeah, don't worry. I'm going to physio this afternoon.
I just came from acupuncture this morning, actually. So this is my third time in the last week, basically. I'm going to acupuncture and it is really helping. So anybody who's experienced any numbness, like long-term numbness, I mean, it's only been 2 weeks since I finished because today's a Thursday and I'm still experiencing the numbness. And you can have these kinds of things because nerves take a long time to heal, for like months I know people still have it for like...
Louisa was saying that when she came on the show, and if you haven't listened to that episode with Louisa, she won the women's race at Atlas Mountain Race in 2023. She had nerve damage in her hands for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It takes a really long... I mean, the nerves are like the slowest healing part of your body, basically. I mean, don't quote me on that, but yeah. I definitely am feeling progress with acupuncture. So anybody who has any nerve damage or numbness, hit up a local acupuncture.
I'm going to get the needles stuck. I'm going to get the dry needling all in my shoulders. And
nice. I haven't done dry needling.
Kind of afraid of what they're going to say about my neck. I don't think anything that bad. I think it's just really tender and really tight. I mean, I did like, obviously when I scratched or was in the process of deciding whether or not to scratch, I was like Googling deep neck flexor exercises and stretches. And I was like, well, if I stay at the CP for 12 hours, maybe I could just do these things and I'll be fine. And that's not the way it works. It's a little bit
more complicated,
but yeah. Crazy. Other than the hand numbness, like physically, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I think I'm good. I woke up sick today. Like, I did everything I could. I didn't drink alcohol. I didn't do anything.
I drank alcohol.
I had like one beer. I was really careful because I have previously gotten sick at like every race I've done. And so I was so careful. I wore a mask as often as possible just because like getting sick when your body's trying to recover from something so massive, it's terrible. And I was like finally over it. And then I woke up today. And well, yesterday I finally rode yesterday, actually, for 45 minutes. And it felt terrible. I was like, God, this is I was on a drop bar bike with no saddlebag and it was mega light and I couldn't ride the bike.
It feels so twitchy. It feels so twitchy. I went out on my gravel bike the other day just for like an hour the day after I got home. And one, I felt like a machine. I was like, holy shit. I will say my legs feel really good because I've been resting for so long. And like, nice. I definitely got like a nice fitness boost and then a light bike.
Yeah.
But going around corners, I was like, this is horrific.
I feel the same way. I literally finished the ride and was like, is there something wrong with me? Like, is it the bike? Is it because I'm sick? I don't know. So going from a flat bar loaded bike to a drop bar ultra light gravel bike is a whole trip in itself.
I loved that before the race you were like your bike was like, all the bikes are pretty heavy, even the lightest ones. Like, it was just funny, you're like, my bike is so heavy.
It's my complaint all the time. It's not actually that heavy. It's heavier than what I'm used to.
100%.
And I have to get used to it. So then you get used to it and then you go back to the light bike and you're like, okay, it wasn't really, this is, weird.
It's so weird funny. Feeling. We're not going to focus on, I guess you haven't announced this race yet, have you?
No,
for fuck's sake.
We could talk about it.
You heard it here first. Cynthia's right.
Spoiler alert.
Racing Transcontinental in June, July?
It's July 25th, I think. Yeah, July 25th. Mm-hmm. So middle of the summer.
Woohoo. And I was just going to say, my question to you was, like, how much stuff are you going to bring for that in comparison to Atlas? Because obviously, like, it's a road ultra, but you can take gravel. I mean, you could do whatever you want. You could ride mountain bike trails if that's what you really wanted to do.
Yeah, I think I'm going to ride I've thought about it a million times over and talked to so many people. I'll probably ride the 3T Race Max. It's like their gravel fast bike. And it can be basically a road bike at the same time. So I'm going to race it with like 35 Schwalbe Pro 1 tires. And then I'll do, like a 40 or 42 front chain ring so that I can ride faster on the pavement, but then I'll probably ride a lot of gravel, I have a feeling, because once you get a little bit more east in the route, it becomes a bit chunkier, but also I think I'll just be faster if I take the gravel versus the longer road passes, and I love gravel. It's more interesting to me anyway. So
this is such an interesting strategy. We're gonna have to unpack that like way more, but
we'll get into it at some point, so stay tuned, everyone.
Sorry, I totally just like threw that into the wind. I was like, Cynthia, you just gotta fucking tell people at this
point. I know. It's almost March, and I'm like, I'll announce my calendar at some point. I don't know. Alice took up my whole life for like 2.5 to 3 months. So
yeah. Well, and the funny part about Atlas was it was like there's all this anticipation to the start. Like you and I were futzing around with our stuff. Like what was it? What were you dealing with your handlebars? Like, oh, it was getting your light in the right place with the bag.
Oh, yeah. Dealing with the bag. Yeah.
Cracked my seat post. Oh my gosh. Bought 2 new ones. I mean, like it's whatever. Also, I drank tap water the day we arrived and then vomited all night. But then, like, you know, we got over all these speed bumps and then we're like, okay, it's the day to start. And there's torrential, like, historic rain. And
We didn't start. We got a message on the app that is used to, like, send messages to racers. And it was like, no start today. Maybe we'll start tomorrow. We don't have any news. But we still had our
hotel, like, room the race. The other day.
Oh, well, yeah, we also had a hotel room. Shout out to Mel right now for literally being smart enough to be like, hey, we should just book another room so we can stay there during the day.
Literally, like,
everyone
this is,
always. This 6 p.m. start, get a hotel room for that night, even though you're not going to stay in it.
For sure. I mean, and then the chaos, like the queue at the race hotel was just wild.
Oh my God.
Like, people were lined up for hours. It's like that the poor hotel, but also, like, I don't know, they got business. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how long were we delayed? Like, that feels like a whole life ago.
It was 24 hours. We started at, like, basically 6 or 6.05 or 6.10 p.m. on Saturday. But we didn't know that we were going to start until, like, 5.35 or 5. And I hadn't put my contacts in because I only brought so many contacts. So I spent 24 hours. I couldn't see anything. Like, I could see. But I just, like, I didn't have very good vision. And I really did not think we were going to start. So I was like,
I didn't think we were either.
I didn't go to the bathroom before the start of the race. I had to pee for
fill
like
up
the
my
first
water.
4 hours.
I didn't fill up my water.
Actually, I don't think I filled up my water either. I think one of my like things was half drank or something. Yeah. And I also hadn't had enough fluids that afternoon because I was like, well, we're not going to start. It's fine.
Lesson to everyone listening. Eat all day as if you're going to start the race. Drink all day as if you're going to start the race. And as soon as your water feels remotely low, fill it up. Because I stopped, like, well, one, the start was hot chaos. Everybody was like, it's a road race. And, like, Nelson's like, go at 20K an hour out of town.
Well, there was, like, massive puddles and stuff. I was, like, trying to stay towards the front. And then we were avoiding puddles. We're in the other side of the road. Like, there was no police escort because we didn't, like, literally. Okay, so quick five. Yeah, we didn't get an official okay to start the race. Like, it was quote unquote started as
a ride,
like a, you know, go as you will kind of start. And that's what we were told, under your own risk, basically. So we all start, of course. We're all there. We've been there for 24 hours waiting to start. So everyone's going to go anyway. And they say that the finisher party is going to be on Saturday still, but the cutoff is moved one day later. So Sunday evening.
Same with all the checkpoints, too.
And the checkpoints, yeah. So basically, we started the race and we're going up a kind of long climb. They had already made 2 alternative routes based on the weather. Like, they knew that there were 2 places where we could potentially come into some serious water or mud, basically. And so we took those 2 alternative routes, and I had actually pre-rode one of them the day 2 or 3 days before. And when we were down there, there was 8 different river crossings, and we were all like,
yeah, it's just going to flood.
It's going to be bad, super flooding. So we skipped the first one, and as we're starting to climb up to the second detour, the lead group comes to a kind of majorish road. And apparently when they get there, the police are like, you can't come this way. You need to go back down. Basically, all this time we had climbed up and go up a different route. So the lead group were all like, I'm kind of close to the top. But at this point, I'm like, I'm racing my own race. I ain't running hard at the front. And all of these lights are coming towards us. And I was like, are those the people from the race? What are we seeing? And then, yes, it was. It was all. So everyone's like,
oh,
slowly
my God.
Flipping
okay.
It.
So yes. That. Okay. So because I don't even know that. No, I had
you didn't make the right turn. That's what
happened. So I had the regular route started until I knew where the detour was, and then you ran into a control car at detour number one. So you took detour number one.
Yes.
And then there was another control car in a town, and they were like, I roll in, and I was like, it's been chaos. Like Sportity, the app where you get all the notifications, was like, just like my phone was on my handlebars, and it was just like lighting up like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, this is like, we're not even like that far in, and we're getting all these updates, because I guess you guys had hit where you got turned around. So then there was another reroute. So by the time I got to that town, after you had been turned around, the control cars were like, abandon all of your maps for the time being, follow the main road, turn when you get to this intersection, and turn when you get to this intersection, then you can restart the maps. So I rode for, I want to say, 2 hours with no route. I just followed the road, and I also had map progress open in front of me to look and make sure that I was following the dots, because I knew that there was several different routes.
So I'm in the group with all of us, and we basically climbed. I mean, and you did the same thing. We climbed up a ton, and then we ended up going all the way back down. We had climbed for like 30 minutes at this point. And so then we were back on the same road we basically turned off on when the first reroute happened. And we rode that all the way up over the first like pass situation. It wasn't the main pass that we were going to go over, but it was basically the first road climb.
Was that TZ? That
it wasn't quite to Tiznik
TZ pass. And TZ and Tishka.
Yeah, TZ and Tishka. So we weren't quite there yet, because we hadn't gone through the town of
Zirkton.
Yes, we hadn't gotten to Zirkton yet. So we're at any the. So basically, we go all the way down, and then we have to climb back up. So then we're in this massive peloton again, climbing up part of the climb. I mean, that's why everyone was like complaining about how like, yeah, it was like a road race, because it really, I mean, we're going down the descent, and there's like random spots of mud, and it's sketchy.
Oh, God.
It was a hot mess. I mean,
it was a hot mess.
I was happy that I had good handling skills, because there were a couple times where like somebody bumped into me and I had to just basically push them back. Like I have nowhere to go, bro. Like I can't, I'm just gonna stay right here.
You're doing like bump drills on the way down. Oh, you're like
literally
just holding your line, hoping. Oh my God, it's so funny to hear what was happening, like, because everything was happening before you, before it happened to me, or like the things that you would encounter impacted what would happen further back in the field, uh-huh, right? Because uh-huh, like as much as the front is going faster, you're almost guinea pigs, because things can change on course, and like you hit it first, and then someone inevitably tells Nelson that this thing has changed, and then it gets trickled down to the rest of the pack. So yeah, I mean, I heard of people making wrong turns and like riding an extra 40 kilometers. Also, one of the riders, Tangi,
Tangi
wanted to do Telluet Pass, the original pass, so badly that he rode to Telluet Pass. The police were like, you cannot go over the pass. So he got turned around. So, you know, when you like descended back, like you had climbed up and then you descend down the road. So I'm about to start this massive descent and I see this headlight like flying up the hill, like flying up. And I'm on the phone with Jake, like just kind of chatting, because I'd been riding alone. And he's like, Mel, I think Tangi's in front of you.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, Tangi? And then he's like, I need to go over Telluet. And I was like, no, you don't. Like, you need to turn around.
Oh my God.
He eventually turned around, but it was.
Yeah, I saw him at checkpoint 3. It took him that long.
But he still finished like 8.
I know. If he hadn't tried to go over Telluet, he would have finished in the top 5 probably.
For sure. It was crazy. So you got to, like, you're on course. You were going over TZ and Tishka, which I drove over TZ and Tishka, the road uh-huh climb. Holy shit. It's gigantic and it's beautiful.
Mm. It was really cold when we did it in the nighttime. I really actually cold. Pulled over and I put shoe covers on, because I was like, I don't know how much longer we're going to go, and we're going to go downhill after this. So I put shoe covers on, which is a good move for me.
Yeah, I think it tops out at 2,206
okay,
meters.
That's not bad. I think that's 5,500 feet or 5,800.
Yeah,
something
it's
like
it's
that.
Not crazy high, but in the grand scheme of like, I forget what it is. I think it's in like dry climates, it can drop 2 degrees Celsius per 100 meters. It's 2 or 1 degree, but either way.
It was the coldest point of the whole route for me,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah,
I would 100% say the first night up and over. I can't even imagine on Telluet what it would have been.
Yeah.
Would have been really cold.
Would have been really cold.
I was riding with I was riding with Josh Ibbett at that point.
Yeah.
We rolled into the first checkpoint with, I guess Nathalie was ahead of me at that point. Mm-hmm. Nathalie was the woman who came in second. Then Masha was right there too. I mean,
Masha is so, like, I'd never heard of Masha before. She's super strong.
She's super strong. Her name on it is Yana Masha. Those who were like following people were like, who is this Yana person? I'm like, I don't know, because I know this girl named Masha that I was talking to. I didn't put two and two together that it was Yana Masha.
She
won the
goats in Portugal. Goats
in Portugal. Yeah.
I wish that Nathalie hadn't gotten sick. Because it was such an epic race between the two of you, I think up until checkpoint two, right?
I got to remember what checkpoint two was. Oh, yeah. Until checkpoint two, basically. Yeah. I think at that point, I left checkpoint two feeling like a million bucks. And I think at that point, that's when maybe she was starting to feel sick. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure.
She couldn't talk when she finished.
So crazy.
But like... kudos to her for resting and getting it done. And like the other crazy part was like she wasn't even a day after you.
I don't remember what how
it was
much
like half a day or I need to look at the times more closely, but it wild. Checkpoint one was like that descent was crazy windy.
Oh my god, so windy. Masha was telling me, I mean, I was with Masha at that point and she had to get off and walk.
I walked most of the descent but I think it got windier as the night went on. Like I was there later at night. It was crazy.
It was crazy. And then there was more wind like that further along as well. Wind where you're like, I could get blown off my bike. That's the kind of strength of this wind.
One woman did get knocked off her bike.
Oh my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so scary. Is she okay?
Yeah, Vera, I think she's
Vera. No. The one who, she shared the room next to us.
Yeah. She shared the room next to us.
That's a bummer. My God, I didn't know that. It's awful.
Yeah, she was okay. Nothing like broke, but she did get knocked off her bike. I walked a good chunk of the descent because I was just like, I didn't feel like it was worth risking trying to ride it. Because I was like, oh, I'm so close to the checkpoint. Like, it would be such a shame if anything happened to me. And how long did you spend at CP1?
Like less than 10 minutes.
Holy shit.
I just filled up water and drank a Coke and then kept moving. I don't think I bought any food because I had so much food with me.
I had a soup and an omelet and a coffee and a tea because it was like the sun had just come up I got there in the dark and the sun came up within 30 minutes of arriving. So I think I was there for maybe, I want to say an hour and a half, which was, that was the perfect amount of time because I didn't want to stop. Like I didn't sleep. I plugged my phone in because there had been so many updates. So my phone was like going off like crazy. So I plugged my phone in because I also didn't start with full charge because the race.
I almost didn't either.
So I plugged my phone in and I was like, okay, great. Like my charger's really fast. I'll just like close my eyes for 30 minutes while it charges and then I'll get out of here, which I'm so glad that I didn't like take a proper sleep because it was just like, sometimes the checkpoints are positive. Sometimes they're really negative. And everybody there was like just complaining about how long the night was and how cold it was and da 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 da. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to like stick to my own plan and get out of here. And then the next section was so cool. You like go through this single track behind this village. And then it was probably dark when you went through there.
Yeah,
so you
I don't remember much of it. Actually, I do remember there was some really fun descending. Honestly, some of the best descending, I think, on the whole route was that first night. I was actually laying in the acupuncture on the acupuncture table trying to remember the first night. And I literally could not remember what had happened until you just mentioned it now. Like,
the 6 p.m. start is super trippy because you still have daylight. So you kind of feel like it's the daytime and then you ride for 13 hours through the night, but you don't stop. So it's kind of like by the end of the first night, I felt like we'd been riding our bike for a week. Not physically, but just like mentally, I was so like the time was just, it was super, I don't know, super weird. I'd never experienced that.
And then the sun rises and you're like, Am I in an alternate universe?
But the sunrise took so freaking long.
It did, but it was really, it was beautiful. I was coming out. You know where the bees were? The yeah. infamous bees? God, I saw those bees and I was like, this is a bad, this is not good when
some
I saw them.
Some guys got attacked by the bees.
30 bee stings. 30.
I met one
Can
of them.
Can you believe it?
I met
oh
one of
God.
Them because there was a guest house and it was like, probably 8:30 p.m. when I got to pass this guest house. And at that point, it was the second night of the race. I'd been awake for like 30 hours. I was like, you know what? Or not 30. I guess 26, which I've never stayed awake that long in my life. And I was like, you know what? I'll go to sleep early. So I went to the guest house and they made me a beautiful dinner, like a huge dinner.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I showered on the second night of the race, which was crazy.
Heck yeah.
And then I took like a nice like 4.5-5 hour sleep. But there was a guy there and he's like, yeah. I was like, did you hear about the bees? And he's like, oh, I heard about the bees.
Oh, I heard the bees.
He's like, I was one of the ones who got attacked by the bees. I was like, shit.
Yikes. That's awful. I saw the bees like that, like literally that like weird. It was like Mars up there.
Yeah.
The sun was rising as I was coming. It was so cool.
The sun was setting when I was going through there. So I can imagine, like, I know exactly.
It was so beautiful. I literally, that moment is when I actually, when I sent you later in the day, I sent you a voice note. But
I think
when
so.
I was in this, when I was experiencing the sunrise there, I was like, I really thought about what you had to say with one of the reasons why you like racing pairs with Jake, your partner, because I was having this moment where I wanted to share it with somebody else. I was like, this is so special. I'm literally in the middle of nowhere and I feel like I'm on Mars and the sun is rising. And there was actually somebody there and we exchanged like, wow, this is beautiful, but it still is not the same. There was not a connection with them.
When it's someone you like really love or a close friend, like it is so different. Yeah, we're going to go back and race as a pair next year, not because I don't like, I enjoy racing solo, but I think first times I like doing it together because our time like is finite racing together, at least for now. Like we're going to have a kid eventually. And just like it gets so much fulfillment out of sharing it. Like, yeah, the sun rises and the sun sets and just like the golden hues and the rusty
That's
rocks.
So beautiful. Oh. Super beautiful.
So what did you think of the route? Like what were your overall impressions?
You know, I liked the route. I don't love the desert. I like green. I like to feel hugged by trees. There's a section on the route actually towards the end of the race where there's trees. And I literally, when I came up to it, I didn't realize, but I was climbing and I felt so good. And I was like in the zone and I looked up and I realized there were trees everywhere. And I was like, oh, wait, I feel like I'm at home right now. This feels like the climbs at home. I mean, they were evergreen. Like they were not the same kind of trees that I have, but you know, but yeah, I think, you know, the route is, it's almost like not, it's just like breathtaking everywhere you look. And the rocks, they change so much.
So much. But the rocks change, but then the light changes the rocks. So like,
yes,
depending what,
totally.
Like the same, it was cool to hear other people like share how they had been there the year before and they'd maybe ridden a section at night or at a different time of day. And they were just like, everything is so crazy and so different. It was really cool.
Yeah, it was super beautiful. I think, I would say like not being a desert person, I still had a really good time. There were some moments I wish I could have seen in the day. Like I rode the Colonial Road at night. Which I, at the same time, I'm like a little bit relieved because I don't like exposure. And the road is plenty wide.
There's obviously a couple Colonial Roads. There's the Colonial Road, but there is a Colonial Road on the stretch. I think it was Imacine to Afra, where you left that gas station, you cross the river, you climb up onto this plateau, and you're on this plateau that kind of looks like the Scottish Highlands. And then all of a sudden there's this big, beautiful canyon and there is a Colonial Road. And so I loved it, but I hated it because it's like a sheer cliff off the side. And I was descending at sunset, which was just like mind exploding beautiful. But I was stressed about the lines I was picking because I was like, well, if I ride too close to the edge, like if I fuck up, I'm going down into the canyon.
Totally. Yeah, I was actually, I think I was, I rode from In the Scene to Afra, and I was doing that descent to Afra actually as the sun was setting too on the second night. Because I slept in Afra. That's
at
where
that, like, omelet stop, right?
Yeah, I asked the shopkeeper if there was somewhere I could sleep, like a hotel or like an inn or like a guest house, and he was like, "You can stay at my house." And I was like, "Really?" So I took a shower in their washroom out of a bucket, and I slept on the bed there.
Okay, you didn't get shown the same washroom I got shown, because I asked for a toilet, and I got walked to this, like, swanky bathroom.
Oh, that's very nice. Like, this was inside their house, though.
Yeah,
so
there was, like, a big, beautiful shower in the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
There was, like, a
in
toilet.
Afra?
In Afra. I just said,
I had to take the shower out of the bucket, which
better
was
than
an
nothing.
Experience. Yeah, oh, 100%. Literally. And I washed my chamois, my shorts. Yeah. And I slept on the bed there. It was amazing. I only slept for like an hour and a half. I couldn't sleep more than that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's hard when your brain is wired. Honestly, yeah. How much did you sleep the whole race? Or like each night?
I probably had at least 1.5 hours of sleep on the four times I slept, but I was probably stopped for 2.5 or 3, depending on the time. But yeah, at that first stop when I slept in Afra, I knew that there wasn't anything after that. I don't remember exactly how many K into the race that was, like
nothing
three
till like Omar's after that, I think.
And so I slept there because I knew I could take a shower and sleep in a bed and spend less time dealing with sleep setup. But Nathalie kept on riding. And that was the point in the race for me when I started riding my own race. Before that, I was way too worried about what everyone else, not like what everybody else was doing for stops, but just like, you know, worrying about them on the map.
Totally. It's a long race, but it's also not in many ways. So I could imagine the stress of like getting caught up in what other people are doing. But it's funny because a similar thing. No, I mean, you chose to stop and sleep and rest. Whereas, like, I don't know if anybody has heard the story about what happened to Justinus, but he only brought one AXS battery for his bike. And normally he doesn't like stop and sleep. And because he only had one battery, he had to stop and charge his battery. So he had to rest. And at the end, we were chatting. He's like, "Wow, rest is amazing. Turns out it makes you feel better and ride faster."
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, I wish I could have slept more. There were a couple times, like one time I was sleeping in like a, there were three other people that were kind of in this town that we were going to under and underhang. And the guy next to me was snoring. And
that's why I don't like sleeping where there are people.
It's
annoying. It's annoying, yeah, to faff, but like for me, I would rather, like, so I considered sleeping in Afra and I was like, you know what? I just want to like mentally get another 20, 30K under my belt and I'll just find somewhere on the side of the road. And it is harder to find a sleep spot at night, but I saw a tree. And I was like, perfect. I can hide behind the tree. There was rocks freaking everywhere. Like rocks everywhere. There was nowhere to put my bivy down. So I just started kicking them like crazy. Like I was just like kicking like nuts. There was a space like big enough to fit like my head to my like butt. And then I was like, oh, if my feet are on rocks, that's totally fine. And I was like just off the side of the trail. And then I slept there. And that was one of my best sleeps. I was like conked for, I think I did 3 hours. I will say I was too warm actually.
Oh, that night, that spot after Afra,
it was hot there. It was,
yes,
really hot.
It was totally hot there. I remember because I left and I like, it was 11:30 PM when I left Afra on the second night. After I had done that sleep in that person's house, when I left, they were like still like all up, you know, I think they were surprised I was leaving. And I was like,
I couldn't believe how awake people were. Except in Taznacht, that big town Taznacht, I for sure thought things would be open at like 12:30, 2 in the morning. And I like rolled out of my hotel room and the town was dead. And I was like,
gnarly.
And I made the biggest mistake that you can make in an ultra, which is like not resupplying when there's resupply available. So I was, I was like, oh, it's a huge town. I'll buy water. And I rolled out of my hotel room at 12:30 and nothing was open. And I was like, are you like, fuck. And I didn't have enough water. So I was like, oh my God, you're an idiot. Thankfully, I found like a village tap not that long after and like filled up. and just put the chlorine tablets in it. Yeah. What? I will say to everyone listening, a lot of people told me that you wouldn't find water on the route.
Oh, there were so many places you could find water. Oh my
and
gosh.
That you like, I agree that you don't need a water filter, but you definitely need Aqua Tabs. Like if you get into a situation where you either make a mistake like me and don't resupply, or you need more water, like most villages have a water fountain, even if there's no shop or nothing open, and to be able to drink or get more water more quick, like more often, is huge. So I would say like definitely Aqua Tabs for sure, for sure, for sure.
A lot of times the water filter or the water taps were actually in mosques. Mm. In like there were multiple times where I saw them in the where I asked one time, like I was dying. And at the same time, I was near the enough pair that was racing Manuel and Federico. And we filled up inside that inside the mosque with water from that location. So, yeah, the chlorine tabs make the and it was hot water. But it was so important. It was so necessary.
And like the chlorine tastes nasty, but honestly, it's better than not having water.
Yeah, 100%.
On the note of water, I forget, we probably talked about it before, but how much capacity did you have and were you happy with the capacity?
You know, that section between Emosine and Afra is the only time I carried the extra 3 liters. And I had way too much water. It wasn't that hot. It was only like 85. I was sweating. 85 is like 28.
Oh, okay. So when I was doing that section, actually, that's not the hottest section I encountered. The hottest section I encountered was
later in the race,
it
for
was
sure.
Actually, well, because I didn't make it past checkpoint 2, but what I found to be the hottest was, maybe it was Emosine and Afra going up that climb. It hit 38°C on
where
my,
we were walking.
Okay, yeah, maybe yeah. It was so where it was walking, I hit 38°C on my Garmin. And I had, I think I had 6 liters of water and I drank all of it.
Wow.
And, but that's, I think the reason I need more water is because I move slower, right? So like 100K for you is going to take you much less time than 100K for me. And if you, like, this is the thing is, you know, people base their setups off of maybe someone who doesn't have similar riding styles or maybe they don't, but I would just like caution people on their choices that think about how long something will take you versus what it will take someone else, because like something that is labeled as like a day of no resupply, a day is very different for like each person, you know? Like,
totally. Yeah. Good point, Mel. I actually was using, because I didn't want to carry the 1.5 liters on the front of my bike. It was just too heavy. Mm-hmm. Like 1.5 liters is just, if they were 1 liter bottles, I think it would have been better. But it made it much more challenging. And so I opted when I left checkpoint 2 to, instead of carry the bottles that were 1.5 liters, I carried a lemon thing and a Coke. And I was descending and I heard, psh. And of course it was on my rotor side. So there's lemon soda spraying all over my rotor. And I was able to pull it off really quickly and drink as much of it. I lost half of it.
Yeah, of course.
And then the break for like literally 2 hours, just so loud. I was glad I wasn't with anybody. I felt really bad for the animals around, if there were any listening to me coming down.
Okay, did you see any animals?
I saw 4. I saw a small snake. I saw a mouse eating another mouse. I saw...
I saw a scorpion. A scorpion, yeah. Right before I was supposed to go to sleep. And I was
oh my God, that's scary.
If you come near my bivvy, I'll freak out.
So I'm glad you didn't have that inside your bivvy. That
could you
been...
imagine waking up to a scorpion in your bivvy? No.
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 No. Nope.
I'd be, I don't know what I'd do.
I don't know.
Other
what
than
I would
freak
do
out.
Yeah. Besides that, no other animals.
Oh, and sheep and goats.
Oh yeah, plenty. I saw for a long time, I only saw goats and I only saw trees and I didn't see any goats and trees. And I was so frustrated until finally one tree with goats and trees. It was before the like really long. Oh, this is way further. It's past the sand section.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
It's the second half of the race.
Because the taxi I took from checkpoint 2 to the finish, we passed through Agadir and the route crosses Agadir there, and it's near Agadir-ish where there are the goats and the trees. Because I saw goats and trees from the car. And there was one point where we like crossed the route. And actually, Hannah and Mateo were in Imsuen resupplying. And I had like just missed where they would cross the road. And I was like, oh my God, I just wish that we'd like, oh. I will say like, we'll get back to recapping. But like, best part about scratching was being at the finish line. I was so gutted that I didn't make it in time for you and Natalie. I was in the taxi, but to be able to be there and like hug so many people that I cared so much about and get to like share in their joy was really, 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 really special. Yeah. Like, it's obviously heartbreaking to scratch, but to like Tom Moschitz, he raced. I met him in Kyrgyzstan 2 years ago and he scratched from like, he got super sick and was really messed up, but he scratched and then he went on to finish all three of Nelson's races this year. So I like stayed up and watched Tom finish, which was like really, cool. Really special.
Yeah.
Watched Mateo, gave him a hug. Hannah was so cute. She's like, she came in and she goes, is that Mel? She's like, I really wanted you to be here. I didn't want you to be here, but I really wanted
you.
Yeah, that was the whole reason I keep coming back to Nelson's races in particular is because it's the same people all the time.
Okay.
And it's like so special. So special. So, yeah.
As a person finishing. And I mean, like, we've all been there where there's not been anybody at the finish line when you come to the finish, or many of us have. I have never finished an ultra race in the daytime. This
really?
Was the first time I finished in the middle of the day. And all the men's finishers were basically there at that point, mostly. And, you know, Nelson and Ulrich's wife and Nicole and just like, yeah.
That's so cool.
The receiving of me to the finish line was really special. I felt very respected and, you know, it was a special moment.
Yeah, the photos of you and Justinus were so cute.
I was like, I don't even know what's happening right now. You want to get on my back?
Justinus is a whole vibe, like the best vibe, but a whole vibe.
It's really wonderful for everyone to be there. And then I jumped in the pool, actually. I was like, well, they had,
that
you know,
would
it was
feel
hilarious.
Good.
I don't know if you know this story, but they were literally like, they were at breakfast, like brunch breakfast, and they were having like a multiple course meal. And in the middle of it, they realized I was going to finish while they were eating. So they get in the car and they're driving back. I mean, like literally they got back like 30 seconds before I rolled up. And so they roll up. I finish. I jump in the pool, whatever. We have this like, oh, this is great. We're there for like another 30, 45 minutes. And they're like, we're going to go get food. Do you want to come? And I'm like, I just finished. I'm like not even functioning, but sure, let's go. I'm super hungry. Why not? So we go in and we eat food. I mean, I sat at that table and I was like almost not communicative, but I was able to enjoy it and have a good time with everybody. And they all started their three course meal over again. So then they had like more food again. I was like, you know, I had five courses, I'm pretty sure. And then promptly went to sleep.
I'm like skipping way ahead in our questions, but like, what was the best thing you ate along the route?
I had the veggie tagine at checkpoint 2. That was really good. Oh, actually, at checkpoint 3, it was like a hotel restaurant. It was like actually there was like food and I was going to sleep there.
Yeah.
So I got a pizza and I got they made like these wraps with meat. And I was like, can I get it without meat? And they were like, weird, but sure. And I had it and I was like, oh, my God, can I have another one? And I took it to go and I ate. I took half the pizza to go too. That night and I ate it. That was the best.
I had pizza left over from lunch on the first day of the race and partway up the climb. It was so good.
It was, I mean, the real food option, like having real food is a game changer. I mean, I ate 25 ho-hos.
Yeah. For anyone listening who doesn't know what a ho-ho is they're like,
it's like a Debbie cake.
They're like those log roll cakes with icing and stuff. They're really good. Before we talk about the ho-hos, I had the legendary omelet in Ait Sahun. Like everybody on the podcast was talking about it. I wasn't going to eat there. I was like feeling just on top of the world. I was like, I'm having a really progressive day. I was mentally so great. So I like rolled in. I was like, I'm just going to get water and leave. And then I saw the omelets on the table and I was like, oh, those look really good. And I speak French. So I asked the guy how long it would take. And he said 3 minutes.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I was like,
yes.
I was like, go.
It's- I'm in.
And that was, it was like tomato and spices and like oil and not brick bread. And it was, and cheese everywhere I went when I got omelets. I would always say fromage because fromage is cheese in French. And then I would always get cheese with my omelets instead of just a plain omelet, but with the tomato and the, oh, so good.
I had a tomato one. I had two tomato ones because I was with Adrian Lechtke one time. We were ordering at the same time and we just said omelet, you know, and they brought out the same thing. And then again, it was actually when I had the trench foot situation where I had to sit at the gas station or the, you know, the resupply for like an hour while my foot thawed out, basically. I don't know what the term for it, detrenched. And yeah, I had that tomato. It was, oh my God, it was delicious.
Was that at the Imacine gas station where you detrenched or no, it must have been after because you hadn't gone through the river crossing yet.
Yeah, it was, I'm like completely blanking on the things, but it was like the last, one of the last major ones before the really long climbs at the end. Yeah, there's two road climbs that are super long.
The Stelvio?
No, before the Stelvio. Like,
oh.
Yeah, like maybe 4 hours before that. I climbed the Stelvio at like 11 p.m.
That'd be better than doing it the heat of the day. I think that'd be pretty horrible during the day.
Yeah. I mean, that's where I had an almost panic attack. Did I tell you about this?
No.
So I was climbing up. I had left the last resupply and climbing out of it. There's this beautiful river. It's really, really pretty. Mm-hmm. But it was really hot. And I thought I was going to be done. I was like, amazing. I'm going to be done. And I still had like 80K or something or 700K. And I was like, oh, it won't take me that long. It took me another like 12 hours, basically. The last bit of the race is really slow. But I'm climbing up the Stelvio. Okay, so the Stelvio is, it's a climb in,
crazy,
it's a climb in Europe. But they call it the Moroccan Stelvio. So this one has,
like
I don't know how many.
Like 23 switchbacks or something like that.
It's awful.
I could be totally wrong, but it's a lot of switchbacks.
It's a ton, and it's like a road that's built up. So on either side, it's kind of like on one side it's fully exposed, and it's got those like little it's really beautiful, I'm sure, but it was dark for me. And at this point, I was kind of sleepy, and I thought it was going to be done sooner, and I realized I wasn't. I was like, I have a lot longer. I'm going to have to sleep one more time. But at this point, as I was climbing, it was really hot. I felt like I was getting low on water. I had not filled enough water at that last resupply. And I was like freaking out. And I started falling asleep while climbing. And
shit.
I was literally, I needed to like actually take a power nap. Like I needed to sleep. But the way that the Stelvio works is that it's this thing where on the inner part of it, it has a water drainage. And so there's not really anywhere safe. There's no like pull off. There's no like safe spot to sleep.
Yeah, because you can't sleep in the drainage. Because what if it starts raining?
Like, or there's so many rocks, and it was like I just felt really scared the whole time I was like climbing it, and I got to a point where I was starting to really panic. I've never had that happen before, and I had to, because I couldn't sleep, I had to stop, and I like sat down. I never saw a car once, but I couldn't put two and two together that maybe I could have just slept in the road. I mean, at one point there was a rock the size of like two cars just in the middle of the road. Like it was huge and it was just there. But I had to stop and meditate because I was having this.
Yeah, you're freaking out.
Panic, and I couldn't get rid of it. And I just basically sat there for a couple minutes, and then I got back on my bike and I was fine. But the climb just never ends. It's the switchback after switchback after switchback. It's just, yeah, it was tough. When I realized I probably still had 10 more hours of riding, because I slept after that, actually. On the other side, I found this, like, it was like a camping spot with, like, it looked like it had, I don't know, it looked sketchy, like, not sketchy, like, it didn't look like an actual business, but there was literally just a concrete pad. And so I slept on top of the concrete pad, and it was super windy, but I was really tired, so I was able to sleep.
You had to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Well, sleeping in weird places is just part of the... The morning I got Shermer's neck, I had slept in Taznak the night before and took an early sleep, got on the bike, was feeling great. I was like, I'm going to hit CP2 like really early in the morning. I'm going to have a lunch and I'm going to roll. Everything's going to be great. And my neck had really hurt. Like I was at this point pedaling with my hands on the aero bars. So I was like,
yeah, I was like a mummy. Oh, that's the worst.
And I was like, surely this can't get any worse. But there was a, like a chunky descent about 50K, 40K from the checkpoint. It had like little steps down. And I'm going down and I hit the first kind of like step down and my head, my neck muscles completely gave out.
Oh my God.
And my helmet hit my top tube.
Oh my God, Mal, that's so scary.
And I screamed and slammed on my brakes, almost crashed because I slammed on my brakes. And I was like, it was like, I don't know, at this point, it's like 1-2 in the morning or something like that. I was like, shit, no. Like, I knew what was happening. When you, like, yeah. Shermer's neck, your neck hurts, you have trouble, then it's very sudden. Never. Sometimes it's not, but for Never. The most part, it's pretty sudden. And I was like, oh no. So I tried to ride down the descent, like, after kind of resetting myself, and I couldn't look up. I could only look at my top tube.
God.
And I was like, this is unsafe. I'm going to crash my bike. So I was like, well, I know rest helps Shermer's neck. So I would like kind of like tripod ride my bike. And then uh-huh. I would lay down on the side of the trail and like rest my neck. So I was just like, I was literally on the track. I was on the track, like just off to the side, laying down with my eyes closed. And I would just do that repeatedly until I could literally no longer ride my bike anymore. Like there was nothing more to be done. And then walked friggin' 30 kilometers to the checkpoint, which I thought would, like, I was like, surely 30K is not that far. It's really far when you're hiking a bike.
With a weighted bike, I can't imagine, Mal. That must have been, I mean, having to, your triceps pushing too. I bet your whole body was just totally yoked from it.
It was, and the descent into the checkpoint is amazing. You get up to the top, and I was just looking and I'm like, this would have been so fun to ride. And I was just walking and walking and walking. But I only cried once on the walk because I was like, well, there's nothing I can do about this. You know, like I was talking to Jake on the phone for most of it because I was like, well, it's going to take me 6 hours to go. 30K.
Shout out to Morocco for having like basically service the whole
everywhere.
Freaking
service
route.
Everywhere, which is good and bad, you know.
Yeah,
it's like
it's good and it is definitely bad too.
I like remote races more, but one of the volunteers from the checkpoint, which they're not technically supposed to do this, but they're just the nicest people, they were messaging me on map progress. I didn't see it till like the next day, being like, where, like, we'll come get you, like, let us know. And I was like, no one is coming to get me. I'm not leaving the race. I'm not accepting help. I'm gonna get there. And I'm not going to scratch. I'm going to sleep. And everyone, when I got to the checkpoint, was like, Mel, you need to scratch. And I was like, I don't actually have to do anything. I was like, I recognize the situation I'm in, but I'm going to, like, I got here. I did it. It was horrible. Like, that was the hardest part of the race, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I couldn't even tie up my shoes. I couldn't sit and eat dinner. But I was like, I'm going to rest. And then the next morning, I'll make a decision.
Yeah.
Because you just...
Did you even sleep, though?
I slept.
That's good.
I slept like 5 hours during the day because I got there around like 11 a.m.
Oh, uh-huh.
I slept until like dinner pretty much.
That's
and then
great.
I had dinner and then I slept from like 9 p.m. because everybody was like chatting and hanging out. It was like people who had decided to scratch. So it was kind of nice to like hang out with people because I got really emotional once I was stopped and realized, like, after Googling and trying to figure it out on my own, being like, there's not really any options here.
You're going to be back. You'll go back.
Yeah. I don't want to do a bike fit. I think it's not the bike fit. I think I didn't spend enough time in the aero bars. And I don't know. I met with a coach this morning, which is
cool.
Oh,
my God. What?
I know.
Amazing.
Shocker. Shocker.
Cool. I'm not shocked. I'm just happy for you. That's wonderful. Good for you. How'd it go?
It was really, he's so great. I will give like constructive and actual thoughts once we've like started working together, but
cool.
Cause in a lot of ways, I thought Atlas was the best race I've ever done.
Uh-huh.
Take the Shermer's neck out of it. Take the like there's always the opportunity to be faster physiologically.
Mm-hmm.
I rode my own race. I didn't get sucked into the shit happening around me.
Okay.
I made all the choices that worked for me. Like, I would go to sleep early, wake up early, like kit choices. And mentally, like, every time I got to a resupply, people are like, you're literally the most positive person. Like, how are you like this? And I was like, well, I did get mad at a guy, though. Did I tell you about the guy I got mad at?
For being, oh, maybe, for being a negative Nancy.
Yeah, there's a guy complaining at a resupply, which, you know, you do need an outlet. Like, don't get me wrong. But I find it really difficult when there are other racers around and it's like people don't really understand how their attitude impacts other people.
100%.
And I came in feeling really good. And this guy was saying how he sucked and how he was so slow. And I was like, buddy, we're going the same speed. Like, this narrative you've created, like, you're just, if you're going to stay negative, like, you, your day will never get better. So, like, pick three things that you think are awesome.
Good for you. Sharing the stoke.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, and I was like, dude, if you stay negative, it's never going to get better. So, like, let's turn it around because your attitude is actually impacting me. And I'm not going to stay here and do the things I need to do if you're going to be this way. And he did turn it around, which is great.
Nice. That's good.
But yeah.
That's great.
We should probably rapid fire through some of the questions that people sent us.
Okay.
There's like also so many stories to tell too.
I know. Yeah. You were talking about crying earlier. Did you cry anything any other times besides that?
Oh, fuck. I was happy crying. Like the whole, I do what I always do at the start line. I start bawling my eyes out because like it's such a transformative experience you're going on, right? Like
totally. You're like just excited about it.
The stars made me cry. Yeah. My mom was sending me voice notes. That made me cry.
Aww.
But the one that made me really cry was I was climbing up the road into Ait Saun. It was after Omar's, like after the waterfall and you're on that big road climb. And my Aunt Carol had sent me a voice note. And so I like tapped to listen to it. And it was my grandparents. She was at my grandparents' house and it was my grandparents. And my grandma was like, you go, girl. Like, we're here for you. Right. And I had to stop it partway because it made me so emotional. Like, it was really good emotions, but I couldn't listen to the whole thing because I, like, just, I lost it.
Aww.
And I felt like, I think the coolest thing about doing these events is just, like, the love that comes out of your circle.
Yeah.
Even from people who don't give a shit about bikes. It was.
Yeah. It's really special.
The stars made me cry. The rocks made me cry. My music made me cry. Didn't actually listen to that much music, though.
I cried once.
Oh, you sent me the video of you crying. Like, that was bad crying, though.
It was bad crying. Yeah. It was on the, I guess, first full day in that section between Imasuin and Afra. And I felt terrible for a whole first day. Like, we'll talk about it in a little bit, but I was focusing on watching my power, and I wasn't able to do anywhere near the power that I normally could. Like, I was like, what is going on? I don't understand. Later, I connected it that day. And then there was another day where I had the same thing. It was because I hadn't slept. And like, I'm like, I can fully point it to the fact that I did not actually sleep. And that really is a big thing. But I had been going up the section that was basically a hike a bike section. Like some of the fast men could ride it, but it was,
but it
like
was so steep and so loose
that it wasn't worth the energy to try and ride it. It was better to walk it. But literally at that point, yeah, an athlete passed me like I was going freaking backwards. I was like, girl, you can hike a bike. You go. Like, I wasn't even mad. I was just impressed. I was like,
it's crazy the speed at which some people can just get up the freaking mountain.
Well, I think I was also feeling like dog shit at the time, too. So it was just like all of everything. And then we went down and then we had to go back up again. And then at that point, I was just like feeling terrible. And I sat down and I was trying to talk to my mom on the phone, and there was service for like 1 minute, and then the service went away. It was the first time I'd called anybody. I hadn't talked to anybody. And I couldn't talk to my mom, and I just sat on the side of the trail and I cried. I was sobbing. I mean, I just like literally, and you know what? I hadn't eaten anything and I hadn't slept that night. And I know that it was all basically related to the fact that like I wasn't properly fueled and like rested, but
we'd been awake for so many hours at that point. And
crazy. So that was a hard, that was the hardest point of the race for me, I think. Yeah, crying and just feeling, I just felt really terrible. And then the next 2 days, I felt amazing. And it just like goes to show exactly what Justinus was saying, but it's better to sleep than not. Rest is super important.
Obviously, like the amount of sleep you need is to feel as good as you can is highly personal. Like some people need more, some people can go with less. But I think like the biggest takeaway is that sleep and food are magical. And
magical.
That if you are having a bad time, like
eat first.
Never make any choices until you've had a meal and you have rested your head, and wait till there is sunlight usually to make any choices.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy for everything to feel really awful when you are underfed and underrested, and the nights are 13 hours long.
You know, the nights are the best parts for me.
I have to agree. I did really enjoy the nighttime. It was super peaceful, and against your love for trees, I was like, nothing can hurt me because I'll see it coming. Like, no bear is gonna pop out. No surprises. Like, it was hard to sometimes like pick out the rocks because like there were a lot of rocks, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there were some rocks that were like so impeding that we had to hike a bike. I mean, I don't know about you. Obviously, your situation was different because you had to deal with the Schirmer's neck. But for me, I feel like there was really not that much hike a bike. I mean, only on the first day.
Other than like the walking that I had to do because of Schirmer's neck, I thought the hike a bike was much less than I anticipated. There was like before Imasi, I forget even where it was, but there was some like riverbeds that you could ride part of the way down. But then if you were there at night, it was difficult. You had to hike a little bit. There was just like some sections where it was really difficult to pick the line. And then there was like kind of like a big thing you had to lift your bike over, but then you're back on your bike right away. And that was like a pretty short section.
There was a section probably a little bit later that you didn't get to, but there was a climb and a like river section that like hike a bike and navigation. I mean, I was shouting.
You're not really doing a Nelson race until you have that. Like, I mean, someone asked the question of ease of navigation, and I'll say like, Mostly good. There are times where you're looking, you have to ignore what your like device wants you to do and just look at the arrow.
Yes.
Look at the arrow and trust your gut instead of following where your device wants you to go. Because there was times where you'd just get sent off track and then you'd be like, Nelson!
Or you'd be like, after Afra, it was dark. And I was like, where am I even going? Like, there were a couple situations like that. And I think that those were the hardest. The ones where it was in, like, a big dried riverbed. And there was a route. But in the dark, it was impossible to see. In the daytime, probably way easier.
I was frustrated going into Omar's at the waterfall because I didn't realize that you would have to, like, you got down into the riverbed. Like, and
so, that was super frustrating. Oh my.
And I was like, what's happening? And then I just realized, okay, we are in fact in the riverbed. Like that is.
There were a couple more situations where you were in the riverbed and you're like, there's no route.
But like, it did take you somewhere amazing. I didn't friggin' enjoy those stairs, but.
You want to know a funny story about the stairs? I am on the phone at this point. I'm talking on the phone with somebody and I'm explaining the start. I'm like telling them about how it didn't really like blah, blah, blah. What we had talked about at the beginning of the podcast. I'm on the phone. I'm kind of talking loudly. I'm in the middle of nowhere. And I roll up and I see some bikes and I've got my headlamp on and I look around and I see people sleeping. And I'm like, I was like, hold on. I'm on the phone. I tell the person to like, I tell them, hold on, be quiet. I think I told them to be quiet. So I see and I like look over and Federico, Damani, the pair.
Yeah, the Italian
one of the pair
riders, from Enough.
Looks up at me out of his sleeping bag. He had been like laying on like a lounge chair and I've got my headlamp on. So I kind of like cover it. I'm like, I'm really sorry. And so I'm like, oh, this is where the stairs are. And so I go to the right and I go through where he is and I'm on the phone. And so I can't quite hear, like my spatial hearing is not as good. And I'm like, okay, here are the stairs. So I started to go up the stairs. I carry these stairs are huge. I mean, they're literally like 2.5 feet tall. I get up and then I kind of look around and I'm like, where am I going? And I see downstairs and I said they're 2.5 feet tall. And I'm like, I don't think I can get down this. This looks really scary.
Why did you...
I don't think I can carry my bike. Okay. I look over and there's someone shining a flashlight at me. And I'm like, am I in the wrong place? And they say, yes. And so I have to figure out how to get back down these 2.5. I basically went to the right and the main stairs that you're supposed to take.
They're little, but they're long.
Exactly. They're on the left next to his house. But it's dark, and so I didn't know. I mean, it's impossible to see where you're supposed to go. So I was like up on the, and then of course I was making all this noise, and I felt so bad. All these people are trying to sleep. Federico was like, no, it's okay. I was getting up anyway. But yeah, so then I went up the regular stairs, and they take you, it's a cool thing. I mean, I get the stairs, and it's not, the regular stairs were way better than the ones that I had originally climbed. So we should be lucky.
I actually didn't lift my bike up much over them. It takes more effort, in my opinion, to lift your bike most of the time than to just like monster truck it over the stairs.
Push through it.
So
yeah.
I was just I'd just do like a big push and like go over four stairs, and then I would do a big push and go over four stairs. And then there was a couple big ones or like corners where you had to like lift it. But I was like, I don't want to lift it. I took a caffeine pill right after those stairs because I felt like dog shit. And 30 minutes later, I was like,
why
also,
high?
There's Red Bull on the road. Not very much, but there's Red Bull at the gas station in Imacene. There's Red Bull in Marrakesh. There's Red Bull in Imsouen. I was so fired up because I love Red Bull. Shut up, Red Bull, sponsor us.
Wouldn't that be nice? You never know.
But the caffeine pills were
caffeine pills
were
are huge.
I didn't take many, but it when you don't need to sleep. And you feel a bit run down and it's not food. Like you just know when you need like a little buzz, it's really, 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 really nice.
When I take a caffeine pill, I take a Tums and acid at the same time because caffeine upsets your stomach. So it's better to just be safe than sorry. Mm-hmm. And I usually try and eat something at the same time so that there's like a cocktail of preventing your stomach from being mad at you.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Caffeine on an empty stomach is a bad call.
Definitely is. What did you think about using your mountain bike? I know you're more of a mountain bike person. Like you would prefer to ride your flat bar. Would you ever change your mind and do it on drop
bar?
No. I didn't think so.
You know what I was thinking on all the descents? I was like, damn, a full sus, like lightweight
Hell
would
yeah.
just be like, cause some like I had a like really proud moment going down a descent. And some of the technical bits where, like, I absolutely shredded a couple riders.
Hell yeah, high five.
And I was like, I'm a fucking badass. I was like,
yeah.
But I was like, damn, that would have been sweet on a full sus.
My God, Justine S. was probably having the time of his life.
Yeah, and, like, Natalie had a full.
Quinda,
yeah,
too?
So for, like, anyone listening, it's by no means mandatory to have a full sus.
No,
I think it would.
Not. You could do it.
You could do it on
a gravel
bike. You would not enjoy it the same amount. I think, and you're also your likelihood of having damaged hands and da 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 da.
Yes,
but it's 100% doable, and I firmly believe that if you are very excited about doing this race and the gravel bike is the only option you have, go for it. Just know that there's like, would you change your bike? What would you do?
I mean, I could put drop bars on that hardtail that I was riding, the One Plus, and I think, honestly, I would be more satisfied and I would have less nerve damage with a drop bar. I feel so much more comfortable. Maybe if I could put a suspension fork on one of my gravel bikes, I would do that too.
What was your gearing?
I know I had a 32, so having a gravel bike would be challenging. The lowest you can put is a 36.
Were you happy with the 32 tooth chainring?
Yes. I wouldn't have wanted anything bigger. I mean, I could have gone smaller, but I honestly, when you get to that point where if you have a 30 tooth and you're climbing, for me, it's like it might as well just walk almost when you're in that.
I like the 30 tooth. There was sometimes that I was happy with the 30 tooth because now that I think about it, there wasn't really much flat riding.
You know, there was more flat riding in the second half. After checkpoint two, there was such a long section. Oh, my God, it was so long. But I did see camels, so at least there was that. And then, of course, we climbed up after that. But, yeah, saw camels. And then we went through. You know what we heard after that point, though, was the call to prayer. The call to prayer is so loud. When you first hear
it
can
loud.
Be really
it's
scary,
really jarring,
actually.
Yeah.
It's super jarring.
And it's in a language you don't understand, so it kind of just sounds like yelling, and it's usually like a deep male voice, so it is mm-hmm. kind of like what's happening.
Yeah, when you hear it for the first time. But I don't know, for me riding in Morocco, you know, I had heard to be cautious as a woman, and I think that was the only like warning. Everything else was all the people are super wonderful. You know, it's a country of hospitality. The people are amazing. And I found that to be 100% the truth. Like those people at the shop, the first place in Afra where I slept, let me sleep in their house. I mean, they weren't going to charge me anything. I gave him 250 dirham because I was like, you are not charging me. So I am going to give you like a huge amount. And then, yeah, I had a good experience everywhere I went, and I never felt unsafe as a woman the whole time. I felt empowered, actually. And the number of like little girls and that were out like just staring in awe at what I was doing.
They're probably
when
like,
I would ride
what
past.
Are you doing? I didn't know this was possible in my life.
Yes. Yeah, it was super special, I think. You know, I actually, this story, this is after the race, but I hadn't told you the story yet. But basically, we went out to a club in Marrakesh with
Essaouira.
A group of people. Oh, Essaouira. Sorry. With Nelson, the race organizer, a group of wonderful people. And that the third place woman, Yana Masha, was there.
Hannah
and I were talking.
Third, but Yana was.
Yeah. You're right. Yes. The fourth place woman. Yana and I were chatting. And Hannah was also at the club, but Yana and I were chatting, and I could see Nelson, the race organizer, behind Yana talking to some people that were local to the area, it seemed. They were speaking in French, and I could see that they kept looking over at us, most, you know, in our direction. The music had stopped, and it was late. We're getting ready to leave, and the people that Nelson was speaking with came over to talk to me, and were basically in very good English saying, wow, what you did was so impressive. We were speaking with the race organizer and he was, you know, saying and explaining the race and the route and, you know, very complimentary, super nice. Yeah. And, you know, it's amazing. And I also was like, well, Yana also here did it too. They were talking mostly to me. I was like trying to incorporate her into the conversation. The guy said, weren't you scared?
Oh.
And I said, are you going to be scared when you walk out of here and walk home or something? And he said nothing for a second. He paused. And he said, well, no. I said, so why would I be scared? And that situation will live with me for a while. Not because we were in Morocco, not because we were anywhere, but just
it's just
that,
the general societal belief that as a woman,
exactly,
it's different.
You would be scared.
Yeah. The guy at the guest house, he goes, you are brave. You are so brave. But he was saying that to everybody. And then he said, but especially you, there was me and another woman, Marika, there. He said, especially you, I can't even believe the riding you're doing. And also as a woman, which he was really lovely. And I would agree with your sentiment that for like the most part, I did feel really safe. It was very helpful to speak French. I think being further back in the field, people are a bit more accustomed to see.
Totally.
They're less surprised. So they're a bit, they yes. act a bit more in their, I don't want to say normal behavior, but they're no longer like greeting you with surprise. They've seen a few women at yes. this point. So, I did get catcalled a couple times on the first night.
Really?
Yeah, which I didn't love. But there was lots of police presence. So I was like, this is just weird. And then it never happened again. And in Tasnacht, the big resupply town before CP2, I just was approached by a lot of people. I was eating dinner and they kept going, madame, madame, madame. And I was like, go away. And I could speak French, so I could tell them to leave me alone. And that was jarring. And then, like, if you go into a bar or like a restaurant at night, usually it's just men in there. But I agree. I never felt unsafe. There was moments of discomfort, but there was never like, I don't feel safe. And the hospitality along the route is incredible.
Uh-huh.
I think just being cautious of like, if you see people on the road, like not like I never went out of my way to go and like interact with someone other than one guy and his donkey. I did stop them and be like, can I take your photo?
I mean, I can't wait to see that picture.
I have the picture on film, and then I didn't realize this. I was recording my GoPro. Well, I slowed down and I'm like, bonjour, je peux prendre une photo? And he goes, oh oui, madame, comment ça va? And we're like chatting.
Right, right.
And I'm like, un, deux, trois. And he goes, wow. And then he's like, allez. And I have it all on video, God, which is so cute.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. That's super special.
I also had a surprise video rolling into CP1. I took a video on my GoPro and I'm like rocking up to the front door and Alan walks out and he just starts like jumping up and down and we hug and he's like, oh my God. I was like, wow, that was cool.
Oh, special. Good memories.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, there's so many more specifics we could talk about, but I do have to go to physio. So why don't we like rock through, like, will you do it again?
Yeah. No. Not because I didn't like it, but because I have other things I want to do.
Totally.
Yeah.
I will do it again. And honestly, like when I finish it, I'd probably go back again too. That's because I'm an addict of Nelson's races and that's just my people. But there are lots of other things I want to do. One thing we would do the same and one thing we would do differently.
Same. I would probably carry the food that I carried and the stuff I carried. Honestly, I think my like setup was dialed differently. I would sleep more.
That's funny. I would bring, if the temperature was the same, I would bring a little bit less. I wouldn't bring my sleeping bag. I would bring down pants instead. I wouldn't bring my rain pants or my like winter gloves, or there's just some like colder stuff that I would leave because I was sleeping early and waking up before it hit the coldest part of the day. So I was on the bike when it was the coldest right before sunrise.
Oh, you know what I would? Carry a second pair of glasses and put croquis on mine. I lost my glasses literally the first night. I was putting my buff on and I didn't realize and it knocked off the glasses off my helmet.
I took mine off of my glasses at a certain point, but agreed, croquis are the goat. What would I do the same? Honestly, mentally, I was like I did a really good job of listening to my plan So I would do that the same. Obviously, that's a little bit harder to control. And I would start with the same food. I would bring more North American gummies, though, because I'm sorry, Europe, but Haribo sucks.
Agreed. What advice would you give someone attempting it for their first time? Bring more North American gummies.
I think, like, believing it, like, for me, I think it's the mental side is so huge. And trying to find like joy in every day, especially the hard moments. Like, don't forget to look up if you, and also like, I mean, there's a million ultra mantras, but never scratch at night. Always eat food, sleep, and just believe in yourself. Cause I think if you have the desire to do this event, you probably can. Like, there's people who, I met a guy, he'd never mountain biked before and he just was like, yeah, I really wanted to do it. So I learned.
That's so cool.
What about you?
Don't listen to anybody else's, you should do this. Do what works for you. And also believe that you can do it, just like what you said, Mel. I mean, the mind is a powerful tool. If you set out that you're going to finish and you will it into existence, it will happen.
Yeah, I agree. Will you use power again for a race?
100%. It was helpful.
Maybe not for the first day.
Actually, it made me feel good because in the next day I saw that the power numbers were way higher and I was able to recognize that we hadn't ridden for 3 days. It was the first day into the race. I hadn't slept the first night. I was able to recognize and it made me feel better mentally going forward. And like another reason why I didn't feel as good and why maybe I was a little slower on the first day. So, mentally, it was helpful.
I think we talked about our lowest lows, but highest high.
When I got to feed the donkey with the apple. Okay, so quick 5-second story. I was pretty far ahead and I had a good lead. So I thought, you know what, I can enjoy the route a little bit more. And so I stopped for resupply and they invited me in for tea. And so I had tea on the last morning with a local shopkeeper and a friend of theirs. And the photographer happened to be following me at that moment. And so we all four of us had tea together, and they actually brought out this amazing fresh bread, better than in the normal bread that you get.
Yeah.
While I was in the shop, I thought, you know what? They have some apples. I'm going to buy an apple. And so I had had this tea. It was a wonderful experience. I felt rejuvenated to finish the last 50K. So I start riding, and I needed to fix something on my bag. I pull over, and two donkeys come up to me, and I just kind of like pet them. And I'm like, oh my God, I bought this apple. I'm going to feed them the apple. And right at that exact moment, the photographer came past, got out, and was like witnessing me feeding an apple. I was literally feeding two donkeys an apple, just like really, really random. But that was probably that. The tea and the apple were the highlights of the whole ride. I mean,
so cute.
A million other things, but it was very special. Super special.
I think the whole thing before, like, I was just on a high.
Yeah.
I did have a low going into Tasnacht when I was like, I'd just been that the tarmac before really kind of like threw my head through a loop, because it's still like 20K tarmac. But
yeah.
Somewhere before the guest house on the second night, it was like just like the long shadows and the mountains, and just that was, I was losing it. And I just couldn't believe what I was doing. And I was like, this is so cool. Cold nights or hot days?
Cold nights.
I have to agree. The hot days is just like,
it's tough.
It's tough. I was soaking my bandana in my, because I had so much water on me. I would soak my bandana, then put it on my head.
Smart.
And it was really nice.
Smart.
Best song you listen to?
A new song called, I listened to it on repeat, called For How Long by Tycho.
Tycho's really good.
Oh my God, so good. I was literally in the sand section. I just had the song on repeat. It was amazing.
God, I
what about
that.
You?
I was listening to Maybe I Need You, Might Delete Later.
So
much. But then there's this song, I listened to this album by Alan Parsons Project, and it's Edgar Allan Poe poems.
Oh.
But like set to mute. It's crazy. It's like, I've never done drugs, but I imagine this is like what doing LSD or some shit is like.
Oh my
God. I was just like going through the desert. My brain was exploding. So I listened to that album back to front. And then there's a song by Empress Of called What's Love. And there's like lyrics. It's like, if it doesn't like make you, break you, shape you, or something like that, like it needs to be like big and expansive. And it was making me freak out. It was great.
I love that you listen to Maybe I Need You.
Yeah.
I might delete later.
I listened to it a lot. And I would, when I was, I probably gave myself Shermer's neck.
Probably.
That's why I got Shermer's neck, y'all. I was headbanging to the song.
Most useful piece of kit.
Fuck. I had this remembered and I forgot. I think my hydration vest was ace. And my raincoat. I wore it a lot at night because it just cut the wind.
Vest always. The Velocio wind vest is like my, I only took it off one time for like a section of 4 hours. I wore the vest the entire time, even when it was hot. I still had at home, all my stuff was in my
pockets. Yeah, it's nicer to put stuff in vest pockets than jersey pockets, in my opinion.
Agreed. Least useful piece of kit.
Didn't touch my winter gloves, didn't touch my hat.
I wore my down jacket one time to sleep on the last night, and that was it. But yeah, I didn't need it. What an event.
I'll be curious to hear what people think of this episode and if there's anything we missed, because it's like, it's such a long, fast journey. But I'm literally going to be late for physio now.
Yeah. I'm going to go eat and probably take a nap. I'm still in that nap game. Hopefully you enjoy your dry needles.
Oh, I cannot wait. Well, thanks y'all for being here.
Thanks, we'll everybody.
Let us know what you think.
Regular schedule programming.
What
coming
we missed,
because
there's lots to unpack. But see you next time.
Bye, Mal.